For I am not ashamed of the gospel, the Apostle Paul wrote, Rabbi Paul, as we call him around here, for I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. And everyone, my friends, means you too. Yeshua, Jesus the Messiah, came to give his life for all mankind, Jew and Gentile alike. And when you hear Romans chapter 1, verse 16, that's your cue. You know you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We are so delighted to come to you every weekday at the same time. Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. Rabbi Glenn coming to you today and coming to you live from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. And today I want to continue on this theme that Rabbi Lauren and I have been talking about, and that is messianic prophecy. One of the most compelling messianic prophecies in all of the Tanakh, the Jewish scriptures, is actually found in the Psalms, Psalm 22 to be specific. But really, in order to appreciate it fully, I want to do things in a bit of a reverse order. So those of you who are at home, don't try this if you're driving, but those of you who are at home, I want to have a look together at Matthew chapter 27, verses 33 to 46. And as I read that, and those of you who are listening, you're in your car, just really attentively listen, I want to urge you to pay attention to the details of Matthew 27. So if you can, open your Bible to Matthew chapter 27. If not, just listen real carefully. And as I'm reading, listen to the description of what was done and said. Now, the context here, the scene, is Yeshua's crucifixion. Matthew 27, 33 to 46 goes like this. And when they had come to a place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they gave him wine to drink mixed with gall. And after tasting, he was unwilling to drink. And when they had crucified him, they divided up his garments among themselves by casting lots. And sitting down, they began to keep watch over him there. And above his head, they put up the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." At that time, two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. And those passing by were hurling abuse at him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests also, along with the scribes and elders, were mocking him and saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he delights in him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The robbers who had been crucified with him were also insulting him with the same words. Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Matthew chapter 27, verses 33 to 46. He's crucified. People are wagging their heads and insulting and hurling verbal abuse at him. They're casting lots to divide up the garments. The soldiers are casting lots to split up his clothing among them. That's worth money. The Jewish religious leaders are saying, "Hey, he trusts in God. Let God deliver him." So that's the scene. Now, let me share something with you. As most of you who are regular listeners to Jesus Made Me Kosher know, both Rabbi Lauren and I are born and raised Jewish. And we believe that Jesus is the Messiah of Israel. We believe he is the Redeemer of the world. But did you know that some rabbis argue that Yeshua blasphemed when he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Now, the Hebrew in the Masoretic is azavtani in Psalm 22. Matthew 27 has Savachthani only probably because Matthew is writing in Greek but transliterating from what would have been the Aramaic rather than the Masoretic text. So a slight difference, but of no consequence in terms of translation. So rabbis actually argue, not all, but many argue that Yeshua blasphemed when he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? They say that Jesus was accusing God of being unjust or unmerciful, and by saying those things, he was showing disbelief. On that argument, they say he cannot be the Messiah. How can the Messiah be someone who blasphemes? Well, let me share with you, before we launch into our study of Psalm 22, a true story, and you'll hear about a rabbi who argues exactly that way. Now, this is from the testimony of a woman named Sharon Allen. She's a Jewish woman, also a follower of Yeshua, Jesus the Messiah. And she's telling her story about, you know, struggling with this, and now she was raised Orthodox and observant. Her husband, she married a man who wasn't Jewish but was planning to convert to Judaism. He was good with everything until the point where she said to him, the third thing you have to do, besides the ceremony, he had already had a circumcision, so he didn't need to do that, just a ceremonial pricking, you know, to some blood, you know, for the sake of the ritual, and then an affirmation of Judaism, and there would be an immersion, a tevilah, a baptism, and then he would have to renounce his former beliefs. Well, he wasn't prepared to do that, and her husband Ron, he wasn't prepared to renounce Jesus as the Messiah. He hadn't really believed any of it. He had been raised that way, but he hadn't really believed for all those years. But when he was told that he would have to renounce Jesus, he couldn't do it, and it provoked a crisis in their family. So Sharon Allen decided that she was going to go to the Jewish scriptures, and she was going to prove to her husband, Ron, that Yeshua could not possibly be the Messiah, so that he could go through with the conversion. They could go on with their observant Jewish lifestyle. So she's struggling. She's reading, and the more she's reading from the Jewish scriptures, the more she's starting to believe that Yeshua may just be the one. She dealt with Benzion Kravitz, who was an anti-missionary rabbi, in other words, an Orthodox Jewish rabbi whose his career is to try to dissuade Jewish people from believing in Yeshua. Well, she says, a short time later, I received a phone call from, this is now a different rabbi. They were all really working on her. He told me about an internationally known deprogrammer named Rabbi J. Emanuel Shochet, who would be speaking at my daughter's yeshiva. I said I would attend. Again, this is the testimony of Sharon Allen. The night when Rabbi Shochet spoke became a turning point in my search for the truth, she writes. His speech centered on Jewish home life and the problems facing the family. He also discussed various religions and how they differed from Judaism. After the rabbi completed his talk, he asked for questions. One person asked, what could be done to protect children from Christian influences? The rabbi stated that if traditions were respected and followed within a Jewish home, there would be less chance for a child to go astray. Another person expressed his concern about missionaries who wanted to teach his children about Jesus. The rabbi reiterated the value of having Jewish traditions in the home, but also stressed the importance of sending our children to Jewish day schools and yeshivas. The third question came from a man who asked what he should do when his child comes home asking about scriptures that are unfamiliar to the parents. At this point, Rabbi Shochet grabbed the sides of the podium and shouted to the audience, never under any circumstances does a knowledgeable Jew ever turn to that man. That man being a name that Jews call Jesus when they don't want to say his name. I felt that the rabbi was speaking directly to me, so I took Ron's hand and whispered, should I say something? Ron said, yes. I then grabbed my daughter Elisa's hand and asked her the same question. She too said, yes. So I raised my hand and asked, Rabbi, what do you tell someone like me who knows Yiddishkeit, in other words, Jewishness, follows Judaism, has a Jewish home, and yet when I read the Jewish Bible, I see that man with so many Jewish families and rabbis in the room. My question hit like a bombshell. For the next four or five hours, Rabbi Shochet and I discussed Yiddishkeit, Jewish customs, the Bible, and more. Finally, when midnight approached, he said what he considered to be the words that would show me and everyone else in the room why Jesus could not be the promised Messiah. He shouted to the audience that Jesus committed blasphemy from the cross. In an angry, mocking tone, Rabbi Shochet quoted Jesus saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? I was horrified at the rabbi's tone of voice and his accusation that Jesus had committed blasphemy. I told him there were many ways that Jesus could have made that statement. He could have cried out in a plaintive voice or in a pleading or beseeching voice, but Rabbi Shochet refused to see my point of view. I found it amazing that in his anger, he apparently forgot that the statement made by Jesus on the cross was first said by our own beloved King David in Psalm 22. And would any Jew dare to say that David committed blasphemy? And she goes on to say, I don't profess to be a Hebrew scholar nor a Bible scholar. I'm only an ordinary Jewish woman who loves Yiddishkeit and who just wanted to know the truth. That night, I told my husband and daughter, I have no more doubts. Jesus is my Jewish Messiah. Again, and she says, a short time later, Ron and Elisa also became believers. So again, that's the testimony of Sharon Allen. And by the way, if you'd like to read her entire testimony, it's quite compelling. It's at remnant.net. You can just go to www.remnant.net. And you can find that testimony among the various stories of Jewish people who have become believers. So, back to our premise for the show today. Why did Yeshua say, my God, why have you forsaken me? What was he feeling? What was he trying to accomplish? There's a man named Samuel Levine. I don't even know if he's still alive. He wrote a book back in the 70s called You Take Jesus, I'll Take God. And it was a book basically, again, seeking to dissuade Jewish people from believing in Yeshua. And, you know, a lot of Jewish people feel that even though they might agree with Samuel Levine, he took such a dismissive and insulting tone in his book that it never really sold nearly as many copies as it might otherwise have. But in any case, he argues that Jesus was blaspheming when he said that. Well, was Yeshua blaspheming? What exactly was he attempting to accomplish when on the cross he said, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, or azavtani, depending if you were going from the Hebrew, but he was probably speaking Aramaic. Why did he say that? Well, in order to understand that, and we're going to look at Psalm 22 in just a minute or two, but let me share something with you about first century Jewish manners of teaching. One of the things that we know about the way rabbis taught their Talmidim, their disciples, at that time, Talmidim, the disciples were expected to have memorized large segments of scripture. In fact, most Jewish people at that time, certainly those who had trained in a yeshiva, had memorized all 150 Psalms. Now, I don't know if any of you know anybody who's memorized all 150 Psalms, but if you were a Talmid, a disciple of a rabbi in the first century in Israel, you needed to know all 150 Psalms. That was the launching off point. And one of the ways that a rabbi would test the proficiency of their Talmidim, their disciples, was with the Psalms. So the rabbi would sit down, the Talmidim would sit in a semicircle around the rabbi, and the rabbi would recite the first line of a psalm at random. And it was up to the disciples to recite the rest of that psalm back to the rabbi in order to show their proficiency. So why did Yeshua from the cross say, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, or zavtani? Why did he say that from the cross? It was line one of Psalm 22. He was employing a rabbinical device. So now let's look at Psalm 22, because as he said those first words of Psalm 22, I promise you every knowledgeable Jewish man watching this scene would have begun reciting in their minds the whole rest of that psalm back to themselves, and they would have been stunned as they realized in that moment that they were witnessing firsthand the very things of which King David had prophesied. And now let's consider the prophecy of Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I have no rest. Yet you are holy, O you who are enthroned upon the praises of Israel. In you our fathers trusted. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were delivered. In you they trusted and were not disappointed. But I am a worm and not a man, a reproach of men and despised by the people. All who see me sneer at me. They separate with the lip. They wag the head, saying, commit yourself to the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, because he delights in him. Yet you are he who brought me forth from the womb. You made me trust when upon my mother's breasts. Upon you I was cast from birth. You have been my God from my mother's womb. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help. Many bulls have surrounded me, strong bulls of Bashan have encircled me. They open wide their mouth at me as a ravening and a roaring lion. I'm poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaves to my jaws. And you lay me in the dust of death, for dogs have surrounded me. A band of evildoers has encompassed me. They've pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They look, they stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. That's Psalm 22, 1 through 18. Psalm 22 tells us that this one would be reviled by the people and the leaders of the nation, yet his trust was in God. It tells us that people would stare at him and mock him and wag their heads at him in scorn. It tells us that he would suffer horribly, his bones being out of joint, suffering dehydration and heart failure. It tells us that he would have his hands and feet pierced. Now, some rabbis have argued that the word should be translated, instead of "they have pierced my hands and my feet, like a lion they are at my hands and my feet." And there is a case to be made for that, but it's actually grammatically a weak case based on the surrounding context and the use of grammar in and among the other psalms that surround it. It's a weak argument, but let's say even for argument's sake that we accept "like a lion they're at my hands and feet." It still doesn't change the meaning whatsoever. But it tells us that they would cast lots for his clothing. Psalm 22 is a very powerful messianic prophecy. And it describes 1,000 years beforehand the very experience of Yeshua. Listen again to Matthew 27. When they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they gave him wine to drink mixed with gall. And after tasting it, he was unwilling to drink. And when they had crucified him, they divided up his garments among themselves by casting lots. And sitting down, they began to keep watch over him there. Above his head, they put the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." At that time, two robbers were crucified with him, the one on the right and one on the left. And those passing by were hurling insults. Those passing by were hurling abuse at him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests also, along with the scribes and elders, were mocking him and saying, he saved others. He cannot save himself. He's the king of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he delights in him. For he said, I am the Son of God. The robbers who had been crucified with him were also insulting him with the same words. Of course, we also know that one of those robbers repented and realized what was going on and said to him, Yeshua, remember me when you come into your kingdom. He repented right then and there. But then Matthew 27 goes on to say, about the ninth hour, Yeshua cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? So as we've pointed out, from that moment on, every Jewish person there, every knowledgeable Jewish man, having memorized the Psalms, would begin going through the rest of Psalm 22 in their minds. And I guarantee you their jaws about hit the floor when they realized, when they watched his garments being split up among the soldiers and them casting lots for his outer garment. When they saw people wagging their head at him and mocking and scorning him. When they considered that the description that King David gave 1,000 years earlier was describing exactly what happens at crucifixion. A person was typically nailed to the crossbeam, then that crossbeam put on the vertical beam. And that vertical beam with the man now attached to it was lifted upright and then dropped in a hole. And the experience of being completely suspended and not able to brace yourself and being dropped several feet into a hole would throw your entire skeletal structure out of joint. And of course, people died from crucifixion. If not from exposure, they died even sooner from either heart failure or suffocation if they broke your legs. And so King David is describing all the things that take place, dehydration and heart failure and bones out of joint. And it's remarkable. Psalm 22, I have found to be one of the most compelling prophecies, speaking of the sufferings of the righteous Messiah, the one who trusted in God, yet surrounded by a band of evildoers who arranged his crucifixion. By the way, this is not an indictment just against Jewish people. This is an indictment against all of mankind, because all of us bear the sin that put him there. Yeshua said in John chapter 10, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own initiatives. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I received from my Father. And so he was nobody's helpless victim. Yeshua went willingly to the cross. But there we have it in Psalm 22, a description 1,000 years earlier of the very kind of suffering and the mockery that Messiah would experience. And when I first read that, I was astonished. And then when I heard anti-missionary Jewish rabbis saying that he was just blaspheming, no, what he was doing was quoting line 1 of Psalm 22, so that even in the moments preceding his death, he is being the rabbi. He is teaching the people. And as they go through the rest of Psalm 22 and see it lived out, acted out right in front of their eyes, many of them, I'm sure, were pierced to the heart themselves. You know, it's no surprise to me that we read in the early chapters of the book of Acts that many even of the scribes and Pharisees had become disciples of Yeshua. You don't hear that a lot, but it is. It's in Acts, early chapters. Even many of the disciples, the scribes and the Pharisees had become believers in Yeshua. Why? Because they knew the scriptures. Now, for some people, the scriptures are enough. But some people are just determined to go with the crowd. My friends, I hope that's not you. I hope you are a person of the truth. Whenever you are hearing this, I encourage you, go back. I urge you, look at Psalm 22, look at Matthew chapter 27, and know that this one is, in fact, the Messiah of Israel. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in today to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Again, we invite you to our website. It's shema.com. And please take advantage of the many resources there. On behalf of everybody at Congregation Shema Yisrael, I want to say Shabbat Shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.